They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. This is On The Commons with your host, Sue Bartholomew. On The Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on The Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me on The Commons today, I have an old friend from Nevada, Senator Mike Schneider. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for having me, Sue.
What's going on in Nevada? I mean, you guys were on the forefront of trying to do something for homeowners. I think that Mike has always been the go-to guy in Nevada when it comes to issues and problems that that arise in homeowners associations, and you kind of spearheaded the legislation initially to try and provide some kind of protections for homeowners. I think you guys were the first ones to have an ombudsman, and you've gone through many iterations of the ombudsman thing, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Right now you've got the Nevada Commission for Common Interest Communities. It's a panel that's made up. Well, I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. Well, we still have the ombudsman and the ombudsman's office, and then we and their position is to try to solve problems, and if you know, in disputes between homeowners and boards. And actually between homeowners and homeowners is really what it is. So, and so the ombudsman does that, and there's a, and the ombudsman has a staff that will investigate complaints, and actually then, you know, there are some issues that just can't be resolved in mediation. And, so they are then processed by the ombudsman staff, and they can move on to this commission for common interest communities. And the commission can make the final decisions on some of these disputes. And our commission's been around for a few years now, and they had to develop, you know, they spent, since it's part-time, and I want to tell people that this is a part-time commission, and people volunteer their time for this.
So they're not paid?
Pardon?
They're not paid.
They're paid like a stipend for the day that they serve, that they have a hearing.
What's a stipend?
It's like $80, something like that.
A day?
Yeah, for the day.
Okay.
All right, so it's, you know, no one can make a living doing that because they meet not on a regular basis. And so the first couple of years they were drafting their regulations and how to put together this commission. And they've completed that, and all their regs are done and been drafted by the Legislative Council Bureau for them and reviewed by the legislature. The legislature had to approve them. The Attorney General has looked at them. Everything seems to be fine. And now they're doing some hearings. And
when did they start doing the hearings, Mike?
Oh, a couple of years ago.
Oh, so they've been doing hearings for a couple of years now?
Yes, uh-huh.
So there should be a bit of a track record that's been established already.
A bit of a track record. There is. And there have been some delays in getting the people to the commission. And there have been some delays in the ombudsman's office, And I think part of it was the past ombudsman. And we have an ombudsman now, a new lady who is who worked for the Attorney General's office. She is an attorney, and I believe that helps at this particular point in time. And so they can process these complaints better and move them along. So I'm encouraged about that. We did hit a snag here where some attorneys have filed a grievance and sued over, they're trying to block the commission from making, decisions on CCNRs, from interpreting the CCNRs. They feel the commission can't do that. And this is, you know, this is another step in the growing process of a commission and of the whole homeowner association process, where some people in private business don't want to give up control.
Okay, and that, now you told me about that yesterday when we talked, and I find that to be absolutely fascinating, because the panel really is made up. I mean, the chair of the panel is an HOA attorney, right?
Leach? He is, no, he is not an HOA attorney. What he is he crafts CCNRs. That's what he does.
Okay, well, okay.
For developers. So he puts them together, and then he's never involved again.
Okay, but he is an industry. He's in the industry.
Yeah,
he's got a very definite slant towards it, right?
Well, he would have, he would have, you know, he understands CCNRs because he crafts them for a living. He is an attorney. He is chairman of the commission. He is, you know, extremely knowledgeable. Now, he never represents homeowners or boards or anything like that. He's more of a, when you say the industry, he's the guy that develops CCNRs, puts them together, and, you know, I'll argue with him sometimes that I don't think some of the things they put in there are proper, but, you know.
Well, yeah.
It's a learning process, and I know. I know he's changed over the years too. You know, it's this industry is you know, fairly new, and you know, attorneys and developers were putting together CCNRs in the past years, and they did things kind of loosey-goosey, and they didn't give it a lot of thought. You know, it looked good on paper. Right now, when you have 300 units sitting there, and it looks good on paper how things should run, but, you know, they really didn't allow for the human factor, you know. That's the way I call it. And people get in and kind of muck up homeowner associations and screw with the CCNRs, and, you know, things don't always turn out the way they should, so...
So they don't want this commission to have anything to do with any disputes involving CCNRs.
Correct.
What does the suit actually say? I mean, where is it? How does this impact
them?
What is their complaint, really? I mean, I understand it's a grievance. So basically what they're saying, or my understanding, is, hey, you're taking away our bread and butter because we make a living?
That's kind of the way I see it, you know. They, you know, now this is Senator Schneider talking now.
And the way Senator Schneider's there in the middle of all of this, and so...
And this is the way I see the world, and the way I see the world is, you know, this commission has the ability to correct disputes, set them in the right direction, make some huge calls on CCNRs, and set policy for the state is really what they have the ability to do.
That's scary.
And by saying, no, it really isn't. Well, I would rather have...
That's scary, Mike.
No, I would rather have a commission that has knowledge in the industry, and homeowners who actually live in these associations, setting policy rather than some judge who yesterday heard a murder trial, the day before heard a rape trial, the day before that heard a drug trial, and now he's going to set some policy in the law on homeowner associations. They don't do that. They don't have the expertise. They don't think about it, and we have just a horrendous decision that was made here a little over a year ago, and that happened. And I just think keep these disputes out of the court.
Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it the legislator's job to set policy? I mean, you adopt
the legislator. Yeah, the legislature. We write the law, and yes, we do set some policy. Now, when all these regulations and everything are approved, they have to be approved by the legislature. All boards and all commissions are creatures of the legislature. We created every board, the medical board, the pharmacy board. All boards are created by the legislature, and of course they can be dissolved by the legislature. But everything they do, all their regulations, have to be approved by the legislature. And as a matter of fact, I was sitting on the Legislative Commission yesterday. We had a hearing that ran 6 or 8 hours, and there were a lot of, the big thing yesterday were regulations. There were a lot of regulations that came before us to be approved, and of course, half of them we didn't approve. So, you know, I would say that this is, you know, if somebody can come up with a better idea, great. But this is the best idea I've been able to come up with, and there's some flaws. I admit it. But hey, we're living it. We're breathing it out here in Nevada, and we're giving things a try. And I think the worst thing we could do is not even try.
Well, you've been trying. I mean, the first ombudsman was, what, appointed 10 years ago? Mary Lou Ashworth?
Yes.
And because that's about the time I started getting involved at the national level and started doing a show. And, in fact, the second interview I had was with Mary Lou Ashworth.
Uh-huh.
She was the first ombudsperson in the country.
Right.
And right out of the box, she was getting something like 1,000 calls a week.
Yeah, huge number. And let me say, a lot of those were coming from out of state. You know, people heard about the ombudsman. They read about it in our paper. Since Las Vegas and Reno are big tourist destinations, the tourists would come in here, they'd read about it, take the paper home with them, and then they'd call. They were looking for help in Buffalo, New York, or San Francisco.
So how many people actually needed help and were having problems in Nevada?
Oh, it was a huge number.
It was a huge number.
So yeah.
So and how many calls is the current ombudsman getting now?
Well, I'll tell you what, the calls, you know, I couldn't give you an exact number, but the calls have reduced. I mean, there are some good things happening out here, and the calls are reduced. And a lot of that is as we plow through some of this stuff with homeowner associations, you know, different questions arise. And when they do arise, we can address them and address them together with the Legislative Counsel Bureau and legal opinions from them, and then with the Attorney General's office, and of course with the Commission. And the Commission gives us a list of questions sometimes they need determination on. For instance, one that will come up, that has come up, and I just received an opinion out last week, is we approved in homeowner associations here a couple of years back that members of the homeowner association can put political signs in their yard. All right? And they can put a political sign in their yard. Now, because a lot of these associations, you know, I would guess most of them say you can't have any signs in your yard of any kind, not even
right.
a for sale sign. So that really, you know, if you look at that, and mind you, we have said homeowner associations are governments. And so if you look at that, that is really restricting someone's freedom of speech. And we really had quite a debate about that. And so the legislature, both houses passed it, the Senate and the Assembly, and the governor signed it, that homeowners have the right to have a political sign in their yard. And so some associations were saying, well, you can only have one political sign now. And so we had to get a legal opinion on that and take the wording of it and the discussion in the committees, the discussion on the floor, and they referred to that, and they said, no, you are not limited to just one political sign. You can have two, three, or four, you know, whoever you support. So, you know, that was causing a lot of consternation with some associations, and you know, so we got a legal opinion on that from our Council Bureau, and of course, that opinion, when the Legislative Council Bureau, it'll be like this in every state, when they issue a legal opinion, that opinion, they feel so strongly about, they will take it, they will back that opinion all the way to the Supreme Court. So that's a big-time opinion, that's not just some local yokel attorney giving opinions, and that's where it comes back to the suit, or, you know, to the grievance by these attorneys that don't want the commission interpreting CC&Rs. Attorneys, private attorneys, it's my feeling, that they want to generate opinions for associations, their opinions, and of course they're cranking out at $350 to $450 an hour. And an opinion will take them all day, you know, or 2 days. So it's worth a lot of money to them.
Not to mention all the prep work that goes into it and, you know, all the fees that they can generate. We're talking to Senator Mike Schneider. Senator Mike Schneider is the go-to guy on HOA issues in Nevada and has been for a long time. Mike, you talked about giving homeowners the right, basically. I mean, I sometimes sit there and scratch my head and wonder how we ever got to the point where we have to get permission from the legislature to put a sign up in our own private yards. We've kind of made a mockery of the word private property. But, you know, you talk about a political sign. What about a sign that says Merry Christmas that's not political? How about any other sign that may not have political connotations? Doesn't that also fall under the First Amendment rights?
Well, you know, in my opinion, it would. And that is where this commission can come, you know, be so good, because, you know, part of these associations, there are some associations that, you know, my gosh, you couldn't put up Christmas decorations or any type of holiday decorations, you know. And, you know, that really thwarts what a common interest community should be about. And it should be creating a sense of community. And if all the neighbors are putting up holiday decorations, that to me creates a sense of community. Now I can see where you say, okay, you can't put your, let's just take the Christmas season, you can't put your decorations up before Thanksgiving. You know, you can't turn them on before Thanksgiving lights. Okay, I don't have a problem with that. And you have to have them down by, you know, January 15th or January 2nd, whatever it is. I don't have a problem with that either. Okay, you know, let's get you a time frame. I don't have real problems with that myself. And, but to refuse to let people put anything up at all is just counterproductive to what communities are about.
Isn't putting, don't get me wrong, I don't really want Christmas decorations up all year either, because it detracts from Christmas, but go back to the Constitution, isn't that a freedom of religion as well? And if you want to, I mean, some cultures start celebrating Christmas early. I'm half Armenian. Our Christmas is January 6th. So if you say, all right, you've got to have everything down by January 2nd, you know, you're taking it away. What I'm saying is that people have a right.
And what I would say to you on that, then you would go to your association and tell them, hey, you know, yeah, I'm Armenian, and our Christmas has a different date. And I don't see where that should be a problem.
It shouldn't be
right.
a problem, but associations shouldn't be a problem either,
right.
Mike.
Right. That's why we have a commission.
And that's why we have a commission, but the commission wrote the rules to start off with. You know, your religious rights in an association, your political rights in an association, your right to free speech, to all of that. And I'm sorry, I'll let you go back to answering the question, I guess.
Okay.
Do you remember where we were, what we were saying?
Let's see. I kind of do.
Okay.
All right.
The floor is yours.
All right. Well, you know, and we were talking about the general overall thing was talking about the commission and do they have, you know, do they, should they be regulating and setting this stuff? And we were talking about the people's freedom of speech, putting up signs and all that. And it brings up a point that I'm going to be looking at this next year. And I know that in the past, you have brought this up to me and you said, you know, the commission is loaded with industry people. Okay. And there was a reason for that. And my reason for that when we started was I needed people that were knowledgeable, to develop regulations and knowledgeable on the industry rather than just a homeowner that really didn't know law and regulation. And so we had representation from all facets of the industry. And it was, oh, we had someone representing a developer. Because they're the ones that put these things together, and then they're supposed to operate for eternity after they leave. So we had we had a representative of a developer in there. We had an attorney who practices in common interest community stuff, and that's where the chairman of our commission came from, Michael Buckley, and I'll swear by him. He's very good, and we disagree a lot on issues, but. He is an honorable person. He has the best for association life. So we have an attorney on there. We had an accountant on there, someone who does accounting and homeowner associations to bring the financial side together. And we had a manager on there, somebody who manages these associations. And then the last was of the five-member commission, we had someone who was a homeowner. And on there. Well, it's up and going now. Everything is in place and it's flowing. Two of the former board members have already left and two have been appointed to replace them and I'm not sure about one of them. I'm thinking she's awfully weak. But this next session, I'm going to try to adjust that and have, because I think they have their feet underneath them now. And I'm going to try to adjust it so we have three homeowners and two industry professionals. And I'm going to see how that goes. You know, what my fear is all the time, you just get some homeowner who is, you know, has a grudge. And they really don't look at the big picture, and that was always my fear. And I'm prepared to move in that direction to make this more for homeowners, and we'll see how that goes. And then maybe lift all requirements after we take a look at it for a couple of years.
I tend to agree with you. I'm, you know, obviously very much on the homeowner's side, but. It frustrates me no end sometimes because the homeowners, a lot of them, and it's really understandable.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
A lot of them are going to see it from their perspective, and their perspective is what happened to them.
Correct.
It's not, you know, it's not a big picture. I was never targeted. I've never been abused by my HOA, so I don't really have an axe to grind. I don't have a grudge. I don't particularly like the concept because, as you mentioned earlier, there's the human factor that has not been taken into effect, into consideration when setting these things up. And I honestly, personally don't, and this is me speaking, don't believe that we will ever, no matter how much tweaking and massaging and cajoling we do, personally, I don't ever believe that we will move off where we are now. We're just going to be trying everything. I don't think they'll work. I don't think it's a workable concept.
Well, and I have some of those feelings too, okay? But we are where we are, and where we are is we have, in the United States, millions of homes, homeowner associations, and you can't back them out. You know, it's just a nightmare to back them out. First of all, if you have condos, they're all attached, you know, and if they're gated, any gated association, you know, the association owns the water pipes, the sewer pipes, the electrical lines, the streets, and they have to maintain them. And so, you know, it's hard to back out of all that. And so we've created this kind of this monster, but the way we look at it here in Nevada, and we've put it in the law, we've stated in the law, that these are governments. And I think that's why it's so tough dealing with them. I mean, look at our government today, our federal government. My gosh,
it's a mess.
Everybody's upset. You know, everybody's upset with Bush, and they're upset with Congress, and you know.
It gets too complicated.
It's heavy. But that's where we are with homeowner associations because they are governments, and you know, President Bush believes we should be bombing people in the Middle East, you know? Well, I don't believe we should. So he and I have a difference right now, okay? And that's the way it is in homeowner associations, too.
It's a little different, though, Mike, because in a homeowners association, we talk about private property.
Mm-hmm.
We sell private property.
We
have this notion that ownership comes along with a certain bundle of rights. And what the association concept has done is flipped all of that over on its ear. And you no longer have those rights. You no longer have the bundle of rights that you thought you had. Your private property is no longer your private property. It belongs to everybody else as well. You are now stuck with trying to keep everyone happy. That's why I don't think it's going to work. But beyond that, Mike, look at what's happening now. I'm hearing more from people, not so much that, gee whiz, my association is upset with me because my garbage can was out 5 minutes longer than it was allowed to be out. I mean, we get involved in the minutiae here. But what I'm hearing from people is that my assessments have gone up to cover the delinquencies of all the foreclosed properties in my association, and I cannot afford it.
Right.
My assessments have gone up from $500 a month to $1,300 a month. Can the association do that?
Well, they are doing it, and that's one thing I'm going to be looking at this next session in February if I'm reelected, and I should be. Las Vegas is one of the top three places in the United States for foreclosures.
Actually, according to an article that I have from Inman News, it's the top one. It says U.S. foreclosure activity increased 57% in March, but it says that Nevada continued to lead the nation with one foreclosure filing for every 139 households, right. Nearly four times the national average, Mike.
Right, and that's why I said we're in a, and you know, you can look at some other statistics, and I always say we're in the top three, and I know Detroit was up there for a while as number one, and I think, you know, different months or the different quarter, you know, maybe Las Vegas won't be number one because the foreclosures had slowed down for a quarter, but we're right there, and so we're being affected tremendously. And, you know, the lenders, they just kind of let the property sit there. And the yards, the landscaping just goes real bad. And, you know, a vacant home deteriorates faster than one that's lived in. It just does. I don't know why that is, but it just does. And I've seen it, you know, even in my neighborhood, and I don't live in an association. I live in a regular housing subdivision without an association, and I've seen foreclosures in my immediate neighborhood, and the same thing happens. The only thing is we aren't collecting dues to maintain our roads and everything else. But I'm introducing a bill that says that the lender has to maintain the properties. And so that'd be number one, and they have to maintain the dues of an association because they are the owner now. You know, when they foreclose, they're the owner. And in these associations, I mean, you have to repair your pools and streets and everything else, and that money is expected to come in. And you know, I just think it's imperative that the lender has to step up and pay, and they have to maintain the property.
But there's, you know, there's a gap.
Sure, there's
between
a gap.
Between the time that the homeowner stops, it goes into default on the loan, and
right.
when the mortgage company forecloses. But a lot of mortgage companies have got so many houses that they're not moving to foreclose anymore. They're just leaving things go, and that's been phenomenal. I mean, that's been article after article that I've been reading across the country. They're not foreclosing. What's happening is, you know, if you can't pay your mortgage, you're not going to pay your assessments, right?
Well, that's correct. I mean, that usually happens. You know,
if you can't pay your mortgage, you're going to lose the house. You're not going to pay your assessment. It's simple.
Right. Right, and you know, they quit paying other bills too, though, when they're strapped, and a lot of it in the different areas of the country, it's deeper than just, you know, escalating interest rates. I mean, people are losing their jobs and everything else, so it gets to be, it's a tough thing. And I mean, I sit on a committee out here on this mortgage, it's a mortgage banking committee, and we're looking at some of the fraudulent loans that have been put in place out here, and you know, that whole scope of stuff. And you know, I don't have every answer, but I know we have to step up and do something. We just can't let this go. Neighborhoods deteriorate and everything else. I mean, the lenders have a moral obligation too. I mean, they do. They put the loan on it, and they have invested in that, and they have their financial well-being to protect, but they have a moral obligation to the community also. And so we're gonna discuss that. I'm putting a bill in, and I'm sure that, you know, I don't know how it'll come out, but we're gonna have some very serious discussion on this whole situation. And you know, I'm sure it'll be interesting. And you know, on our meetings are put over the internet, so you'll be able to tune into some of them and listen.
That sounds great. Yeah, I want to go back to the associations, because what it looks like is happening is you're getting the trickle down effect, the domino effect, if you will, where you've got banks that have foreclosed, you've got a lot of property that's sitting there vacant, especially in condominiums where utilities are provided, electricity, all of the basics. Now you've got people who are struggling to make up the deficit for the foreclosed on properties, and they're going to end up in default as well. Then they're going to, then the association's going to be able to start to foreclose on them. Because they're being special assessed. Some of these assessments are very high, Mike. Some of them are extremely high.
I know. And I understand that. And all it will do at the end of the day, if boards don't sit and look and analyze where they are and where the association is going, all they'll do is drive more of their homeowners into foreclosure and to severe delinquency. There is a happy medium. I mean, a community has to come together in times like this. And I think that here in Las Vegas, anyhow, I've been in contact with the realtors, and they're moving properties pretty fast now. They're selling real fast.
The market's picking up in Las Vegas?
Yes, it is. And
there was an article that someone sent me today about one of your casinos laying off a whole number of people.
They laid off MGM Mirage Corporation.
Yeah.
Laid off 400 or 450 managers, middle managers, and they say it'll save $75 million a year. The business is off here. The resort industry business is off. And so they laid off 450. Well, when you look at the overall employment on the Las Vegas Strip and what that company has, the MGM Mirage, and the number of large casinos they own, that wasn't a huge layoff. Okay, and you look at this, the same company, MGM Mirage, they own the Bellagio, New York, New York, they own Excalibur, the MGM Mirage, they own the MGM, they own, so many of them. And they're big hotels with, each of them have thousands of rooms. And I believe the MGM itself has 5,000 rooms. Across the street, New York has 3,000. Next door to that, Monte Carlo has 3,000. And those are all owned by the same company. So it wasn't a big layoff for them. And if you look at that same company, they're building a project out here called City Center with thousands of rooms. And City Center is the largest private development in the world. It's over $7 billion. And they're going 24 hours building that. So it's creating a lot of employment. And as soon as those hotels, there are like three hotels in there and high-rise condos and everything, as soon as those are finished, they'll need, just in that project, they'll probably need 12,000 new employees.
But the people who've been laid off are either not going to be staying there or, if the market's that tough. I mean, I guess you could always say that people are coming in, but I guess the reason I mentioned that is you said properties are moving.
Yeah.
But who's buying the properties?
Well,
the economy's that bad. Who's buying the properties?
The economy has slowed down, okay, but people are still moving to Las Vegas. Percentage-wise, we're the fastest-growing retirement community in the nation, percentage-wise. So we still have our retirees that are moving in. And then, for all these rooms that are being built, we're going to need employees. We don't have enough employees here, because we have 40,000 rooms being constructed right now, 40,000 hotel rooms under construction. And, that equates to 120,000, 130,000 jobs that we will need to support those hotel rooms. That's just, each hotel room represents an employee, and then you triple it through the community for support.
And so all of these are future homeowners and associations, right?
Well, they're all future. They have to have a roof over their head, you know?
They're all going to end up in associations trying to make the lead balloon float. Let's get back to associations, and I want to go back to the Common Interest Community Commission that you have in Nevada. You said that, what are homeowners saying? What kind of feedback are you getting from the homeowners who've actually been through the commission and been to the, you know, to them for help?
Well, the, once they get there, you know, they appear to be satisfied because finally they're getting resolution to their problem. And it ends there. You know, it's like, okay. Now I can finally get resolution, and this whole problem will be over with. So I see that's a big relief to the people who finally get to the commission. The problem we have is getting them to the commission. It's bogged down in the ombudsman's office, and I know in the next couple of weeks I had a meeting down there last month, and now I'm meeting with the head of the administrator for the real estate division, the ombudsman, and the director of business and industry is over the real estate. And we're having a meeting here in 2 weeks because I'm frustrated it doesn't go faster.
Why is it getting bogged down? Why are you having a problem getting the stuff to the commission?
I think what they have done, they've put in some procedures that slow it down. And you know, they want to go by, they're trying to do it too much like courts do things, too much legalese. And I don't agree with that, how they're doing it. Homeowners, when they have a problem, they want to get resolution right now. They don't want to be drug out in some legalese process. And they want to get in fast and get it done. So my position with the real estate division is, let's just get them before the commission as fast as we can. Put all the information together, document what it is to the best of your ability, and get it before the commission, and let's get some decisions going. So that's where I see is the problem that I'm not happy with. I want to process more.
Is there a record of all of the decisions and all of the cases that the commission has handled? Is there some way that we can maybe talk about some of the particulars of the cases on there?
Yeah, I don't have it right in front of me.
Yeah, but I mean, no, I mean, it's going to take some prep work on my time, on my part, to get up to speed on what's happening. But yeah, it would be interesting to find out exactly what kind of cases come and what the resolutions are, and whether, I mean, maybe we can talk to some of the homeowners as well to find out exactly how satisfied they are, if they feel that, you know, their issues were addressed or not.
And you know, if you lose, you're not satisfied. If you win, you're satisfied.
What's the ratio? Do you have any idea how many?
I don't know. It seems to me like they told me here a couple weeks ago that they're falling about 50-50.
They're falling about 50-50.
Uh-huh. Which to me seems probably, you know, just off the cuff, I'd say, well, that sounds about reasonable, you know. The board's going to lose half the time, and the homeowners will lose half the time, you know, because some homeowners are kind of off the wall, and just like some boards are off the wall, you know. So I guess that number, I was kind of happy to hear that number, because I'd hate to see if it was, you know, one side was winning 90% of the time, because all the thousands of calls I've taken over the last 14 years.
Is that how long you've been doing this?
Yes. Uh-huh. So all those calls, I mean, it has been thousands.
Yeah, I imagine. Because I know I've sent a lot of people to you, too. When I get calls from Nevada, they say, the person to go to is Senator Mike Schneider. Here's his
right number.
Call him.
Right. And I know that a lot of the people I talk to, after I talk to them for a while, I think, well, this homeowner is, you know, pretty whacked out. They're out to lunch, and you know, they're not going to get resolution to their problem because they're so mad. And it started out, as most of these situations happen, I've found out that they start out pretty mild. And if people would just check their egos and their tempers at the door and proceed in a businesslike fashion, they'd be okay. But people get entrenched and they dig their heels in, and then homeowners do things a lot of times that are, you know, they shouldn't do.
Like put Christmas lights up at Christmas time.
Well, no,
and it's not
that
allowed. And
no, not
political
that.
Signs or for sale signs in their yards.
Yeah, but, I mean, it'll start over something like that, okay? And then it escalates where they're, you know, where they're not staying within the guidelines of their CC&Rs at all. They just quit following all guidelines, quit paying their dues, quit paying you know, everything. They just get crazy. They get so mad.
They do get mad, and I've talked to so many people, and I'm, you know, I take every opportunity, and I'm going to do it now. If you live in one of these things, you owe the money, you've got to pay it. Don't even think about not paying your assessments, because you can be in a whole lot more trouble than you want to be, really. But really, Mike, in a lot of areas, it's the only remedy that people have. It's like, I'm not getting what I'm supposed to be getting. I'm paying this. I've asked for this. So why should I pay? And so they stop paying. And when they contact me, they're now the $200 that they legitimately owe has ballooned into $10,000 because we've got all these legal fees tacked on. You know,
right.
The attorney has the secretary push the print button on the computer, and that's $450.
Right.
And the other thing, Mike, is that associations, when you legitimately, when you try to get caught up and you try to get paid up, a lot of them will not accept anything less than the full amount. So what we've done basically is turned associations into collection agencies for the attorneys.
Well, yeah, what it is, and I think that it boils down, in my opinion, to irresponsible board members. And they become consumed with their power, and they don't want to, you know, they think they're too good then to talk with homeowners and sit down and talk with them. They get mad at them, and that's it. They turn it all over to the attorneys and to the collection agencies, and there the fees go, and they refuse then to talk with homeowners.
Well, that's because the attorneys tell them, you don't have to deal with it, it's not good, you're a neighbor, just turn it over to us. And of course, you know, they generate fees. You're seeing the same people who are suing the commission because they don't want
to lose their income stream.
Right.
Right.
We're talking to Senator Mike Schneider from Nevada, and Mike, we're sort of coming towards the end of the show here, but before we go, earlier in the show you talked about a court decision last year that was horrendous. You want to tell us a little bit about that? What court decision was that?
Yeah, it was, we had people in our Summerlin North Association, Master Association here, and the guy had a basketball hoop that his kids weren't big enough to move. It was one of those on wheels that you sit on the side of your curb or in your driveway. And this gentleman who is a local weatherman on the TV station here.
I talked to him.
Yeah, Kevin Janison.
Yeah, I talked to him. Did he lose his case?
No, this is like, you cut the baby in two. It was such a bad decision. And what the judge did is he ruled and said the Janisons have to move their basketball hoop up on the side of their house. And it can't go out between, it can only be out between, I think, 10 and 5 for 6 months during the winter, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then in the summer, it can be out from like 8 to 8, something like that, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And, you know, so he made that ruling. So the Janissons have to move their hoop. They are the only people in the state of Nevada that that decision applies to, which to me is an illegal decision, because Janison can take the hoop, push it next door. You know, if it's sitting on his curb, he can just wheel it to his neighbor's curb. And that's it. He doesn't, you know, it doesn't affect his neighbor. That is the type of bad decisions you get from judges, because they don't understand homeowner associations. They don't want to be involved with them. And some of these judges, they just, I think they have these quick reactions. Let's just get rid of it. Rid of the decision. Well, that decision was, in my opinion, is totally unconstitutional. It is unconstitutional. It conflicts with Nevada law. And, you know, Janison just, you know, he just laughs at it now. It's just a laughable decision, you know. And he could take it to the Supreme Court and get it overturned, but why? You know? Why? Why spend $50,000 to go to the Supreme Court to be able to leave your basketball hoop on the curb? You know, it just doesn't make sense.
So is this something that you're going to write legislation to overcome in some respect? Are you going to say that associations don't have the authority, the right, the power to prevent homeowners from using their property in a manner that would allow their kids to be in their yard? I mean, this is...
Well, that's already in the law.
It's in the law.
Yeah, it's already in the law. And this had to do with the streets. The streets in Janison's association are public streets. Okay? So the curbs are public.
Oh.
And that was the thing. Janison said, hey, I have it sitting on in the public street. The homeowner association has no control over it. It is in the law, and that's why this was a bad decision. It was a bad decision on many levels. Okay? This, and the judge, he wrote, in essence, what he did was write a law here in Nevada that only affected the Janissons at their address. Right? Judges cannot write laws. All judges can do is interpret the law. The legislature writes the law. Governors don't write laws. They just carry out the laws that the legislature writes. And, you know, to see a judge do this, I look at it and I just shake my head. And I said, this guy doesn't understand what judges can do and can't do. I mean, I was just dumbfounded.
Are judges elected or appointed?
They're elected.
They're elected.
And that guy was up for election, and he was feeling the political heat, I think. And he issued a bad decision. You know, he issued a decision that's unconstitutional, just blaringly unconstitutional. But, you know, that happens. That's why I will do everything I can to keep homeowner association issues out of the court.
Mike, what's it going to take to get America back into the American zone? I, as you know, start my show every week with "You're now leaving the American zone."
Well, you know, I don't know. I think it'll always be like this, but we'll have, I think, better laws and to protect people, and it's just, it's one of those things, because I said these are governments. Our legislature has put right in law in a statement, the preamble to Chapter 116, which governs homeowner associations, the preamble says that these are quasi-governments, and they act as governments, and they have the ability to tax and fine and all that. So we have put right in the law, we have stated that they are governments, and we are going to regulate them as governments, as we, and the legislature will do that. The legislature will regulate them with these laws, just like we regulate our cities and our counties. And so we've been very aggressive on our stance on these homeowner associations.
So if they're governments, then the Constitution applies.
Right.
Because a lot of people will say, and not every state recognizes them as governments. A lot of states and at the industries, coaxing, claim that they're private contractual relationships, and therefore the Constitution doesn't apply.
And that's wrong. That's wrong. Nevada has said that's incorrect.
So why do you have to go back in and piecemeal return constitutional rights, like you are allowed to have one or two or three political signs in your yard? If the Constitution applies, you shouldn't have to do that, should you, Mike?
You know, here's the whole deal, Sue. You shouldn't have to do that. But these people revert to their CCNRs all the time, and we have board members and attorneys. This is hard to believe, but we have attorneys that say that the CCNR supersede state law. And I said, I just shake my head. You know, no. When the state makes a law, it supersedes everything in the state of Nevada except for federal law. You know, the state bows to the federal government. But in a state like Nevada, every city, every county, everything bows to state law. So I can't even believe that attorneys would be...
But it generates, that's what generates the business for them.
Yeah, and to me it's malpractice. But
Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Good luck, and I would like to know more about the commission. I'd like to know exactly what kind of cases they've heard and what the...
Maybe we can get together again in a couple of months.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, Sue.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
You bet. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. That's onthecommons, all one word, .us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Thanks again for joining us, and see you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.